Welcome to the game.
It's a beautiful thing.
With Mark Duffield.
By golly gosh.
The son of a darkened shearer and a self-described ball-playing jack-of-all-trades.
We shouldn't be surprised, should we?
Who lit up footy fields in the southwest before becoming WA's preeminent AFL scribe.
My goodness.
And Glenn Quarterman.
Wow-wee.
A proud Victorian parked permanently in the west who would have played 300 AFL games if not for his incredibly small hands.
Goodness gracious me.
Together, they are Duff and Quarters.
You know who.
And this is your favourite footy podcast.
It's unbelievable.
Hello, everybody. We are on the eve of a final in Perth that does not involve WA teams. This is the Duff and Quarters podcast. It is Thursday. Friday night, Optus Stadium will light up. We're going to be brought to you today by Tab Touch. You can get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call Gambler's Help on 1800 858 858 if you have any issues. With me in the studio, we have Josh Gallup, our producer and sound effects man extraordinaire. Have Glenn Quartermain, the man with very, very, very small hands. I am Mark Duffield, the son of a darkened shearer. And somewhere down south is Mark Golden Tonsils Reddings. Where are you, Skeet?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm in Dunsborough, the heart of Dunsborough as we speak, and I'm told it's 14 degrees up in the city at the moment. Well, guess what? It's about 4 degrees colder down here. So I've got a bit of a lurgy after, I think, mixing with G. Quartermain during the week, but as all three of us, in fact, well, all four of us may do when you're in times of trouble health-wise, you decide the best bet is to drink some red wine this afternoon to alleviate the troubles.
And seek some shelter, I believe.
Well, not so bad down here, to be honest, in terms of the damage I heard up in Perth. But, yeah, it's cold and it's wet and it's obviously weather that we're used to in the middle of winter.
I'm referring more to bars that you've been to than weather you've experienced, Skeet, but anyway.
Yes. The Shelter Brewery, which I went to the other night in Busselton, it was a really good spot, and hopefully we'll get there in a more official capacity to talk up the merits of what a great spot it is and what a great job the guys do there with the meals and the drinks, et cetera. So, yeah, great to have their support.
So, Skeet, you've mentioned you've got the sniffles. You've mentioned it's about 4 degrees down there. You're doing it very tough down there in the southwest, mate. I'm just going to get on the phone and call the Royal Flying Doctor Service to go down there and pick you up and get you back here.
If it's that cold, you'll probably have to switch to Cab Sav off the Merlot.
Oh, yeah, I think. Definitely go to the Cab Sav, I'd say.
Yes, it'll be champagne footy day tomorrow night, boys, let me tell you that. How about the numbers? I'm really surprised just on the ticket sales. I'm pleasantly surprised it is. I thought we'd get 30 tops, but this is a really good result for WA footy.
So we're talking high 30s now?
It was 38,000 when I texted Optus Stadium. That was mid-yesterday afternoon. I wonder whether we'll have a bit of a slow day today when they, as all the people that are umming and ahhing about going, assess the weather. But hopefully we're talking cloudy and clearing tomorrow. Hopefully people wake up tomorrow and we get another spurt. We might get into the mid-40s.
Maybe. I reckon when people find out there are still plenty of tickets available, I reckon we could talk mid-40s. I reckon mid-40s would be a great result.
Yeah, that'd be a good outcome. I was hoping for 50, but maybe I'm an optimist.
Yeah, it's still possible. Duff. And, you know, tickets are really cheap. I bought four tickets, two adults, two kids at $70. That's as cheap as you can get.
So who are the adults you're going with?
I'm not. I'm going separately, Duff. It's purchasing for a couple of friends and my two.
I think you may be in the same room as me pre-match quarters, so there you go. I'm not going to.
We'll be doing it tough too, Duff.
We'll be doing it tough, yes. Would you be making an reappearance for the game, Skeet?
Yes, I am actually coming up doing some radio work and hosting a function for the AFL tomorrow night. So,
well, you may be in the same room as us as well.
We'll see. We'll give you a wave from the cheap seats, mate.
I'm not sure about that, but I think you're right, Quarters. The ticket pricing is so critical for what the AFL has done here to get those numbers high. So I'm not sure if that will continue for the prelim finals, but I think it's absolutely paramount because maybe there was a bit of a fear that people are going to save their money for the back end of the final series and obviously the grand final if you can snag a ticket. But the ticket pricing's been really well thought out by the AFL.
All right, let's talk about the news of the week so far. Eddie McGuire's not coming to the grand final, boys.
And I feel a bit for him. I can't see a reason why. That's illegitimate. I think he is what's the terminology?
Essential.
I think he is essential. If Damien Barrett, if Sam McClure, if the other media people who I also regard as essential workers, and they're entitled to be here, they're here quarantining, why not Eddie?
I would imagine you would have a quota of people with every production and with every publication. And I'd imagine they viewed him as surplus to the
crew. Yeah, I think that's ridiculous. I don't think he would be surplus to that. I think there's something more to it. I feel for him, actually. I think he should be here.
Skate?
Yeah, I agree with Quarters. I was surprised when he was knocked back. And given the other journalists that are in town and given what Eddie brings to the table, I can't quite work through the rationale behind it. Obviously, there's a government element to it. Whether his son's being part of the production team has triggered something, I'm not sure. But let's be honest, Eddie is good for the footy. He's great for the game. Like him or hate him, he always brings a bit of colour and he'll say something to get a crowd to an event. And no, I think I'm not embarrassed, but I just think surely there's ways that we can get people of his stature into the state. And I understand there's the argument about, you know, loved ones and people who are sick. I know that's constantly in the background during the next 3 weeks, but from a footy sense, he should be here.
So what you're saying, they're not playing the health card, they're playing the politics card here.
I think they are. And I don't think with his sons, they were initially part of the discussion, and they are producers, whether you argue the point or not. But I think his go-to-go application did not involve his kids. So he was knocked back himself.
Okay, well, we'll watch to see what unfolds there, because I'd imagine that there'll be phone calls made between Eddie and the AFL.
I think that's all been done. I don't think he's coming. I think he's conceded.
You think it's done?
And you know what? He's accepted the umpire's decision. The only reason he's talking about it, to be fair to Eddie, is that everyone keeps asking him about it. So I think it's disappointing, but it's not going to ruin the spectacle of the grand final at all. But I just think it's disappointing. We've got to be bigger than that.
And you'd say, thank goodness they've only got it for 1 year.
Well, can you blame him? The way he's been treated. I mean, that's not a great comment, and he's guilty of these comments.
Well, with all due respect, we've only got it for 1 year because there's a bloody contract in place that has it there until 2059. Yeah. So please, let's not talk about unfairness towards Victoria.
Yeah, but this is Eddie. This has nothing to do with that contract.
I know that. So spare us those comments, Eddie.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, didn't need to say that.
I don't have a strong view on whether he should be or shouldn't be. I think it is what it is. I think these are times when some people are able to get in, some people aren't able to get in. I can see the absolute validity in your argument that if others came, then Eddie too should be able to come. But having said that, there are a lot of people with much better reasons to get back here than Eddie Maguire.
Well, than any media, not just Eddie. I don't think you can, you know what I mean? There are plenty of reasons outside football.
Yeah, okay. All right, the Carlton coaching position. Quarters,
they have
a panel.
Oh, they finally got a panel, have they? Jeez, horse bolted, gate open, really? Now, can I tell you something that was almost comical last night?
Go on.
Watching one of the TV shows, Ross Lyon, they were asked to pick their favourite grand finals, and Ross has pulled Carlton's victory over Hawthorn in 1987. Why? Why?
Well, you know what? I vaguely remember the 87 grand final. I was actually at the 86 grand final. I was working in Melbourne at the time. That was the first one I ever attended. Stood under the old Southern Stand.
Oh, yeah, standing room. It's brilliant.
It was anything but brilliant, but anyway, I was there. That's all I can say.
You know you're alive.
Yes, you knew you were alive. You could barely see the game.
Ten deep.
When they kicked it high, you couldn't see where the ball went.
No, you have to duck.
let's just say men were not taking the time to go to the toilet.
No, well, that's what the empty Foster's cans are for, Duff.
No, they weren't even using the
empty Foster's cans.
Okay. They were just letting
on the spot. Concrete bowels, if you'll pardon the expression, of the Southern
Stand. Deep in the bowels of the stadium.
That's why they had that smell about them.
Yes, well, anyway.
You know what else was famous? I have to bring it up about that grand final, apart from my boys losing.
Skate, take a guess. What are you going to say?
I'm trying to think, 87. In fact, that was the first ever VFL grand final I went to. Hot day, David Rhys-Jones, towered up Dermy.
Yep.
And bear in mind, 87 was the year, and we talk about Melbourne's run this year. That was a famous back end of the season where the Demons just qualified for the finals, got through to a prelim. We know the Jimmy Steins incident. So that final series had as much drama as anything. But, well, it'd be Quarters' with some self-pitying about 87 here.
No, it wasn't. So 87 prelim, by the way, Buchanan kicks the winning goal. But Michael Tuck had his arm around Robert Flower. Remember when the goal was kicked and they said to each other, right, I don't know who's going to win, but good luck whoever does. But the following week, the grand final day was really, really hot.
Yep.
Only day Michael Tuck ever wore no sleeves.
Yeah, that's you asked me that before. I don't know how I remembered it, but yeah, it was a big day for the Blues, but that seems so long. In fact, it is. It's the best part of 35 years ago. That's Ross's favourite memory, is it? He seems a bit needy to me, boys, with his just what I'm hearing of the quotes of him ringing up the president to see where the process is at. So is he that desperate to get back in now after not wanting a bar of it 3 months ago?
I think he probably is, and I think he views this as a list he can do something with. Like, if you look at what – there are certain lists Ross Lyon will not be suited to. Don't send Ross Lyon to North Melbourne. You know, don't send Ross Lyon to Adelaide. You could argue that Gold Coast is nearly a list he can do something with if they wanted to send him there. Carlton's probably the right sort of list. Carlton is a list with a fair degree of established talent that he can organise and prune some of the rough edges off and get a spike in performance. He's not a development coach, but he is a winning coach when he gets a list that he can do something with.
Yes, and good to see David Parkin joining that panel. And I say that in truth because someone who I have great respect for, who has a fair bit of Carlton in him too. So he's
joining So the panel, the full panel is?
Okay, I don't know the full panel, but Kane Little's on it. Greg Williams is on
it. Brad Lloyd is on it.
Brad Lloyd is on it.
Two board members.
And two board members. So they just escaped me for the moment. So it's an extensive panel, bit of experience there, bit of Carlton there, obviously. So now they'll go through their due process, and I believe Brad Scott has been contacted as well.
So, okay, that's interesting that Brad Scott's been contacted because they've basically publicly announced their criteria, haven't they? It needs to be a coach with some experience. Yep. That eliminates a lot of people right from the start. You guys, if you're on the panel and it comes down to a choice between Brad Lloyd and
Brad Scott,
Brad Scott and Ross Lyon, who are you going for?
I'm a big Brad Scott fan. I understand Ross's credentials. I understand there'll be a pop in 3 to years. I'm more looking at the long term, where it leaves Carlton long term. The last thing Carlton needs is a 3 year pop where they almost win a flag and then they're left in disarray.
Skeet?
I think Ross Lyon, for all the reasons you gave, Duff, I just think for what they need now and the next 2 or 3 years, and Quarters is dead right about that sugar hit, which, I mean, Carlton supporters don't care if they get that sugar hit and they play finals next year and make top four. And I think Ross is probably the safer bet or the bloke that can get the job done with the list that they've got. And it comes with a caveat, of course, of you know, how will those around him inside the football department work? Is there any question about the way he goes about his business with regards to relationships inside the club? So all those have to be weighed up. But if you're going purely on results-based, I think it's very hard to go past Ross with what we've seen in his career.
Yeah, I think if you're looking short-term, Ross Lyon is the better bet. If you're looking mid-term to long-term, Brad Scott is the safer bet. That's how I would sum it up. If I wanted one of them to coach my team this Saturday and get the win, it's Ross Lyon. But in 4 years' time, I reckon it may be better if it's Brad Scott.
I think Brad Scott, the problem with Brad Scott is I think he's looking, obviously, he would have as much interest in that AFL football operations post as well, which he's the front runner for.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see, like, he would be, if he went to Carlton, he'd be working with more resources than he had at his disposal at North Melbourne. Is that a fair call?
Oh, yeah.
So it would be interesting to see what a coach like Brad Scott could do with those sort of resources at his disposal. I think the other interesting thing is, I mean, Ross Lyon is a highly intelligent man. You know, is he capable of evolving and understanding that, you know, look, I got a few things wrong and I raised eyebrows across the desk from me in the studio here. I got a few things wrong. I mishandled a few situations. I've got to be better than that. If I get another opportunity, I'm going to be better than that. Is he capable of that, or is he basically just a leopard who can't change his spots?
Can I just say, I think if we look back in the history of coaches, and this I say this with the greatest of respect, half of them, and I say this, half of them are mad. Half of them have got in history shows, and you go back through the Waffle, the VFL, and obviously different styles, but you go through Toddy at his worst, Mel Brown, even Ken Armstrong. They all are just fire and brimstone, and just at times you thought, where are these blokes? How their blood pressure hasn't gone through the roof? So I think it takes a special and a different type of person to be a full-time coach without it affecting you and your personality and your character. So I agree with you. I reckon he can change to a degree, and I think he's just putting all the right messages out that he desperately wants this job, and for that reason, I think he will.
I look forward to that. I'm very curious as to whether that can happen if he's appointed coach. Look forward to his exchanges, particularly with the Melbourne media, into the future.
I don't think the media is the problem. I always really enjoyed Ross's press conferences. I mean, at times you knew that he was having a crack at you. You know, the old fingernail deep analysis, that used to get wheeled out pretty regularly, but that's okay. We're all big boys. Yeah. And let's face it, we make observations about them and we criticise them. So therefore, we'd be rolled gold hypocrites if we don't cop a bit back. I think it's the people around the club that don't have a voice. I think they're the ones that suffer under Russ Lyon. If you're a star player or if you're someone he has to salute up to, you'll be fine with Russ Lyon because he'll take care of his relationship with you. It's the other people around him, the people that work under him, if you like, as opposed to across from him and up from him. And I think they're the ones that in the two clubs he's been at, they're the ones that traditionally have suffered and they don't have a voice. They're not the ones that get jobs in the media and talk about what a good coach Russ Lyon is. They're the others.
Will be fascinating. Now, across town, some big news at the Caringbush.
Craig McRae.
I think it's a really good appointment.
So, guys, this is an interesting one. And get your opinion on this. Collingwood has gone down a certain track, and to me it's the Melbourne track. This is the young coach and trying to put a really heavy hitter assistance panel around him. So the mail is that Lepich will go with him, former senior coach.
He's a lock. He's going.
So yeah. Former senior assistant at Richmond, former senior coach at Brisbane. And there's word that they've been into Michael Voss as well and had a look at him. So he's a former
AFL coach.
AFL coach, great player, senior assistant at Port Adelaide for a long period of time. So that's one model. And the other model is the Carlton model, the direction they appear to be headed in, which is the Uber coach.
Maybe different lists too, where the lists are at. It may have some bearing on that. But what have all three got in common? Say McRae, Lepich and Voss get together, all triple premiership players at Brisbane. And Craig McRae's 47. He's not young, but he's done a fantastic apprenticeship. If you look at how apprenticeships should have worked leading into an AFL job, I think he's just primed for this.
Skeet, given the soft cap and all those things, which model do you prefer?
Oh, I think Collingwood's chosen the right model for themselves. I honestly do. And the interesting part to come out of the Craig McRae character profile is that he's a relationship builder, and that is such an important aspect of coaching in the modern era. And you hear Justin Longmuir, same description, a relationship builder. This guy, when you hear Lee Matthews talk about him, said that going back to his playing days, probably not in the top six players that he thought would go on and coach. And Lee, and you listen to him when he speaks, also pointed out that some of these alpha dogs when it comes to game day, back in playing for Brisbane, that doesn't always translate into being a good coach in 10 or 15 years. So this guy might have just snuck through a couple of back doors in terms of profile to get to this position. But by the sounds of it, I don't know him. I don't think I've actually even met him. But the press conference, he looks down to earth. He looks like someone who will quickly, despite the fact there's a board upheaval going on around him, will be able to just get a bond between the club and the players. And I think it's a really good decision for Collingwood, as Quarter said. Carlton, for their part, they're not that dissimilar with regards to what's happening with their board and the possibilities of challenges, etc. But I'm more comfortable with what Collingwood's done and the way they've gone about it. And, I actually hope he does well from what I've heard from him over the past 24 hours.
Actually, if talking about the disquiet on the Collingwood board, I loved his response to the question, his answer to the questions about the Collingwood board, whether he thought that whether that playing out in the background would affect his initiation. No. And then the long stare, which, he's ready. Even though it wasn't to a packed media contingent in front of him, I loved it.
That's a great skill at a press conference, isn't it? To stop talking.
Oh, yeah.
To not talk. Like, say what you got to say and then stop talking.
Yeah. Never saw Sheedy do it, though.
Oh, no. He just started rambling. Started talking about Martians and...
Genius.
Yeah.
Oh, he was so much fun, Shooty, and great for the game. Look at the apprenticeship. Coached a bit at Collingwood. Under Hardwick, under Clarkson, and also spent a bit of time with Bellamy at Melbourne Storm, shaping their kicking, the rugby NRL players' kicking. So has got an extensive background. I like the NRL factor too, and I think he's going to be a really good coach.
Just as long as he hasn't been at the Jockeys Club doing some work around Airbnbs.
The Airbnb 5. Jeez, on the Mornington Peninsula, 16-hour party.
There you go.
So good luck to the Pies. We want to see them up and about, don't we?
Yeah, I think. Look, how far away are they? Where's their list at, do you reckon?
I reckon they could be up and pushing it back into the 8. It can happen quickly.
Skate?
Yeah, I tend to think it's going to be 2 to 3 years before they're actually challenging. But given what we've seen, well, Melbourne's a great example, albeit they had their tough year last year. You can turn things around pretty quickly. I think they're going to obviously go and get some good players in the draft. I think there's a decent upside for them. And look, I honestly believe that they can not make the 8 next year, but I think they can be one of the bigger improvers with the list that they can build pretty quickly.
We saw a lot of their kids get exposure towards the end of the season, didn't we? We know that Dacos emerged as a good player in 2020, so we give him a tick. Who are the others you saw towards the back end of this year that you liked, do you reckon? Henry would have to be one, wouldn't he?
Yeah, and I think Kelly also, who didn't play much this year, I think they're big raps on Kelly as a key forward.
Yep.
He's been very unlucky so far. That's Craig Kelly's son, Will, I think it is. So big raps on him. I think they've got already, the nucleus is okay.
Quainer.
Yeah.
Bianco showed a bit, good ball user, good decision maker.
And of course, they're getting the other Dacos in, who's rated very highly. So I think there's a lot to look forward to there.
And, of course, then on top of that, you have the likes of Darcy Moore filling up one of your spine
coming
positions.
Back, yeah.
That they would probably still consider themselves one power forward short, really, wouldn't they? It's never really translated for them with Mason Cox as one of those tall forwards. I did like Darcy Cameron's season, but he's more of a forward ruck, helping Brody Grundy out and allowing Grundy to get forward a little bit more. So, Brody Mychek is your classic second forward, isn't he? He's not the main guy, but he's very good if you've got a main guy.
So you put Kelly in there, and I don't know about Cameron. I think he can be more than that ruck forward. I actually really like the way he's emerging.
Skeet?
Cameron's for me, I'm a bit with Duff on that. I think he's – I'm not sure he's that main man that – I mean, they haven't really had a key forward since Travis Clark, have they? And so they're looking for that players, as a lot of clubs are, mind you, and Fremantle fits into that category exactly the same. So, getting more back next year. Jeremy Howe, of course, was interrupted this season as well. They get some experience back. I can see them having a spike. And, of course, as we mentioned, getting some of those father-son involvement through the off-season and getting some more games into the young kids, I can see them having a really improved year, which I don't think Collingwood's setting the bar too high next year.
Let's get on to some trying to tip a winner or two. How'd you go last week, boys, out of the four?
3 for me.
I think I got 2, to be honest with you, from memory.
I got 2.
Stitched up.
I missed the Cats. I missed Port.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I missed on the Cats.
Yeah, I would have loved to have had that one back, but of course I've jumped on Geelong.
Are you jumping off? That's the question.
Well, no, you know
game.
What? I'm not, at least for another week. Skeet gave me a hard time early in the season when I was very quick to jump off and think they were too old. So I decided, okay, I'm climbing on and I'm hanging on, and I'm hanging on by a thread at the moment, but I'm going to stay with them for at least one more week.
So, of course, we're talking about the game tomorrow night, the semi-final, Geelong GWS at Optus Stadium.
So with TabTap, Geelong is $1.38 and GWS is $3.10. No Toby Green for GWS. We spoke about the tribunal hearing the other day. Of course, the other development on that front, boys, is that the AFL is at some point going to appeal that suspension and try and get it out closer to the 6 weeks they asked for.
Which is the right decision. They had to do that as the governor of the game. And as I said, I'll take 3, but I'm more comfortable with 4 to 6. That's where it'll end up.
Skeet?
Yeah, I like the fact Gillon McLachlan came out and made a point of trying to push for that. I mean, he could have let it slide and go through the end of the season, Green isn't seen or heard of on the field. But I think it's more a statement on behalf of the umpires and what it means for the reputation of the AFL. I think what he said, Gillon McLachlan, was terrific to just point to the fact that we think this is certainly a crime that deserves bigger time. And I'm more than happy for them to pursue that after the grand final, which they'll do.
I have no argument with a stiffer penalty for Toby Green, although the bar I set for this was he couldn't play again this year. Now he won't, regardless of the result tomorrow night. The only problem I have with them going for a longer penalty, you juxtapose that against the Lachie Neal one with Matty Nichols, and I have this favourite saying about AFL footy. AFL footy is not about how well you can play. It's about how often you can play well. My argument is the AFL Tribunal and the MRO does not play well often enough.
But, Duff, you can't revisit Lachie Neal
now. I don't care. If I'm GWS, I'm taking that incident in to the Tribunal, and I'm saying to the Tribunal, earlier this year you said that this was a fine, and now at this point of the year you're saying that this is 6 weeks. How can you reconcile that? When you look at the adjectives that have to describe contact with an umpire so that it's suspendable, disrespectful, Neil is a tick for disrespectful. Demonstrative, Neil is a tick for demonstrative. And I would argue he's half a tick for aggressive when he tugged on the arm of Matty Nichols. To me, you just cannot have those two incidents alongside each other, and one's a fine and one's 6 weeks. Now, I know people will say, well, they got the Neil one wrong. Clearly, yep, they got it wrong. We, yep, all did.
Yes, we did.
Because we all tutted a little bit and thought, oh, he's a bit lucky. But there was no, let's draw a line in the sand, let's stop this right now. Lachie Neal should have been suspended. And he should have been suspended for a minimum of 2 weeks. And I'm not sure you can die in the ditch over a 6 week suspension for Toby Green when you've let Lachie Neal off with a fine.
Yeah, I think you can't. There's no point making the same mistake twice, though. And at some stage, they have to draw a line in the sand. Now it's time. Now, I understand you're saying 3 weeks is the line in the sand. I'm saying more.
Yeah, I'm just not sure why they're so adamant about it. Because I think they're going to make fools of themselves. Because if I'm drawing that comparison, that I suspect 8 out of 10 people are. And so basically what they're declaring is that the Lachie Neal decision earlier in the year was borderline incompetent. That they could look at that and apply the formula for contact with an umpire that requires straight to the tribunal and suspension, and they could look at that and say that's only a fine. That doesn't pass the pub test.
No, it doesn't, but you can't make the same mistake again.
So what, the rules?
And you can't revisit.
The rules have changed mid-season then.
Well, you have, yes.
Which is what?
Well, that's not unusual, Duff.
Yeah, but that's the problem, isn't it?
Well, like, it's a problem.
We have to expect more of the AFL Tribunal than that.
Yes, we do, but I think now is the time to get it right going forward.
Yeah, and we also, look.
Send the message out. Won't happen
again.
Yeah,
and okay, that's good. Send the message out to community umpiring, to community football leagues, that we will not tolerate this contact with umpires. We need to send the message to the AFL is, hey, you lot, you dills, let this bloke off with a fine in the same season that you've given this other bloke 6 weeks.
Well, is this not a job?
This is a message for you. Your judiciary needs to be better than this.
Well, great example, great opportunity for them, for the new head of football to do that, to send that message out.
If we're revisiting cases, are you then happy with the 1 week that Tom Hawkins got for touching Dean Margetts?
Well, at least he got suspended.
Yeah, it's probably unders, but again, now's the time to draw the line in the sand and use it as the precedent going forward.
Even on the weekend, Mitch Robinson, right?
I didn't like that at all.
Runs headlong at the umpire because he didn't like a decision. At the very least, I reckon the umpire should be empowered in that scenario. Free kick, 50 metres.
I'll give you the tip. You do that in rugby or even the NRL, you're off the ground.
Yeah.
I did not like that at all, and there's a lot of it goes on. It's just not Mitch Robinson.
So we've set the scene in the AFL, and the AFL's helped do this, where we're allowing that sort of conduct towards our umpires.
Yep.
And then when, you know, clearly Toby Green crossed the line, clearly he cannot get back onto an AFL field this year, regardless of the outcome of the appeal. But make no mistake, who set the scene for this?
What I will say is that having spoken to Dean Margetts this week, he thinks the behaviour, the respect between player and umpire has come a long way. Now, we're watching on TV, and look, they are isolated incidents, whether it's Lachie Neale or Toby Green, and unforgivable, obviously. But it's also an education process for the players to try to get to the same level that we see in rugby and NRL with regards to officials. So you might say they're grown men, they're professionals, they should know how to react. Mitch Robinson is the case in point that really is worth looking at in the future. And the demonstrative behaviour and maybe intimidating behaviour is something we need to take another step with regards to, if not suspending, certainly on match day, a penalty that hurts the team at that point. So, look, as I say, Dean Margetts, he's out there. He told me categorically that at the end of the day, the relationship between players and umpires has never been better. We know that Stevic and Green have a reasonable relationship from what we heard at the tribunal. But, there's certainly room, and I'm sure the AFL, as Quarter suggested, that they need to have more consistency, but also have that as our line in the sand where we go in 2022 and maybe an education over summer for the players to embrace.
Just quickly, we'll get back to the game after this. That's fine. But one comment that Dean made to you guys on your radio show, Skeet, that jumped out at me, there's great friendship between the AFL umpires and players. They don't need to be friends. They need to be respected.
No. Yes, they do. Yeah, and they are in rugby and NRL. They are respected.
And that's where it's lacking.
Yep.
The authority of the umpire is not respected.
I don't mind a bit of banter, but, yeah, I think that we've gone a little too far the other way. And there needs to be that relationship. They need to execute it. Back to the game, it's not only Toby Green. They've lost Cumming.
Yep.
And Tom Green. So they've got a few outs, GWS. I like the ins for Geelong. Zach Tui's an in. I'm fascinated to see what they do. Clearly, they're struggling down back. So maybe they go to Blissarves. Maybe he can go down back, spend some more time there where he's played some pretty good footy. Radaglia maybe comes in and gives them a chop out in the ruck as well. So it'll be interesting to see what they do there.
The interesting thing about Geelong is that Jordan Clark doesn't appear to be in the frame this week. Jordan Clark went to Geelong as a small defender. What is the area they're vulnerable in?
Yeah.
It's being carved up by small forwards.
So does Narkle go back there? I think Mitch Duncan was used back there a bit.
Narkle's a midfielder.
So, but Duncan was used a bit.
But he's a rebounder, isn't he? Like, you want Mitch Duncan with the ball in his hands, not playing lockdown on some dangerous.
No, I'm not. Yeah, that's right. So, I think they lacked that last week off half back. So they need to address that.
All that said, we're all tipping the Cats, aren't we?
I am tipping the Cats. Interestingly, shocking record week one of the finals, 4 out of 5 in the semi-finals, if you go back 5-6 years. So they go all right in week two. I just think the outs, I think the ins are good for Geelong. A few questions still to be asked. Didn't like the Cats at all last week, but I'm pretty confident in picking them this week.
Skeet?
Yeah, I like Geelong as well for all the above reasons. So interesting, just stepping forward a week, and if they do win tomorrow night, Geelong, they take on Melbourne. For where we sit now, is there a team you think that will get greater benefit out of a bye before the grand final? Is it a Geelong if they can somehow find their way into a decider with the age of their list? I mean, I know it's stepping down the track a couple of weeks, but I wonder what effect that will have with whether it's injuries or fatigue, or in the Bulldogs' case, if they got there, the travel, all that stuff. That's one that I think we'll certainly try to weigh up in that fortnight.
It'll definitely help the teams coming through the semi-final.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And I don't mind that so much. You know, I don't know. Probably, I reckon we have to get to a stage where teams are only having 1 week off. So if you're going to have a bye, do you get to a point where there is no week off for teams that win a qualifying final? Like, should every final be a final, as in you lose, you're out, sudden death?
Possibly. Yeah, again, we go back to it. The only break should be the 2 weeks leading up to a grand final.
What do you reckon, Skeet?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of Melbourne having, as a one case, they won in the qualifying final. They've got a 2 week break before a prelim final. Then they get another week's break. Put it this way, from everything I hear from footballers, this time of the year, unless they're carrying an injury, they like to keep continuity with playing week after week. Obviously, you'd rather win a qualifying final, of course, and be sitting back waiting for a prelim. But it's going to be fascinating to see how teams like Melbourne, even Port Adelaide, deal with that maybe two matches inside the space of a month.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I think 2 weeks off is probably too much. Now, that doesn't mean you can't do it and win, but when you look at a team like Melbourne that's absolutely rolling at the moment and you have that break in momentum and then another, let's assume that they win the prelim and then another break in momentum, could that disrupt them enough to tip their bid for history on its ear?
Been 2 years of disruptions though. I think they're sort of set for this. I think of any period where it's going to hurt you less, I think it's now.
And what about Geelong? The fact that Geelong has to play the hard way to get through and then maybe has a week off with their old bones and old muscles.
It's really going to benefit Geelong. Really going to benefit them, I think.
If they get through.
If they get through. I think they get through this week. I'm not so sure about next week.
All right. So we're all on the Cats in the first one. And then we move on to up to Brisbane for the second semi-final, Brisbane versus the Western Bulldogs at the Gabba. Brisbane are $1.60 with Tab Touch. The Western Bulldogs are $2.35. This shapes as a pretty even game, doesn't it?
It does. A couple of things I didn't like about Brisbane last week. One in particular was Harris Andrews. Now, what's your take on Harris Andrews?
He's carried an injury.
It's to a point where it's really affecting his ability to impact on the contest. So that really concerns me. I'm actually going to roll with the Dogs here. Now, it's not just because I picked them pre-season, but I think, and Brisbane have won 9 of 10 at the Gabba this year, I'd call it a courageous tip, but I'm going to go with the Dogs this week. I liked the second half against Essendon. I thought the first half was average, but I think they're just starting to build. The key is going to be Liberatore. I think he's the key to them. If you can stop every time they've shut him down, teams have shut him down this year, they've either been vulnerable or they've lost more often than not. So, but is Brisbane the sort of team that does that? And is it a Berry who goes to him? Who goes to him?
Tough question.
You back a really good midfield against a really good midfield, two of the most attacking teams in the comp. It's a hard one, isn't it?
Berry's a key for me. So I think when they beat Richmond in that qualifying final up at the Gabba last year, Berry was massive for Brisbane. He's had an interrupted preseason. I think he had a groin issue earlier in the year, so he might be a bit like Elliot Yeo, where it's taken him a long time to build momentum and form. But he's a big body. I suspect he'll be the one they'll want to play some sort of accountable role. He was the one that went to Andrew Brayshaw when they played Fremantle. Now, different calibre of team altogether, but basically the message was, if we need to shut one down, he's the guy we're going to get to shut him down.
But who do they shut down? My argument is, you go to Liberatore, shut him down, you sort of kill the head and the body will die because he's the extractor. I think they go to him before they go to a Bontempelli or to a McRae.
Boys, we've got breaking news coming through from the news floor. Ross Lyon is out of the Blues coaching job race. According to my source on the news floor.
Wow, that is big news.
You keep talking about this game. I'll try and get some more details on that we can come back to.
So yeah, that's interesting. Yeah,
it is. So who wins this? Okay, let's put it this way. I expect Alex Keith to go on to Joe Danaher, but who goes on to Charlie Cameron? So I was racking my brain about this last night, Skeeter. Who's the obvious there?
Yeah, it's he's such a difficult player to match up on with his speed, what he can do at ground level in the air. It is, and the other factors you guys were talking about it was both these sides. You look at their last month heading into the finals, and I know the Lions beat the Eagles by 38 points, but the Bulldogs looked ordinary. So did Brisbane at times. Both these sides are, I'm not saying limping into a semi-final, but they're just trying to get their mojo back because you go back to mid-season, the Bulldogs and Brisbane both looked as if they'd be finishing top four and prelim final time, here we come. So I think neither side is playing great footy at the moment. I like the fact you described your tip as courageous, Cordis. Let us be the measurement of whether it's courageous. But I don't think it's that courageous. I mean, I think it's more than, I think, $1.60 for Brisbane on Tab Touch. So I think it's a tighter game than that. But I still think Brisbane up there, given their record at the Gabba. I am worried about the midfield of the Dogs because they are, as you said, if you shut down Libba or you go to Bontempelli, there's so many ways they can slice and dice you.
Yeah, McKay, Treloar's there. So there's a lot of depth at Brisbane too. Neil Zorko, who's a bit off last week, although Neil wasn't. We mentioned Berry, Lyons, McCluggage. So they bat really deep, both teams. There's some talk of whether Marcus Adams goes forward for Brisbane because they've been a bit shied out, particularly with McStay out. But I would hate to see that happen because if you've got Harris Andrews suspect and you've got Norton up there and we saw Shaki last week, maybe English sliding forward, I'm going to need both of those players in my back half.
Yeah, and just quickly on Marcus Adams, having seen him play at AFL and in the WAFL, he's a defender every day of the week in my mind. And look, he's had some injuries himself, but I think that's where he's suited. If they're pushing him forward, that's a concern for me if they're thinking of that. It's just time for blokes like Joe Danaher, big final, stand up alongside Charlie, who we saw last week, terrific. But we need to see Joe do the business in a big game. And this is as big as it gets at the moment for the Lions.
And the other thing is, I think the two players who may well be integral to both teams are off half-back, and that's Daniel Rich and Bailey Dale. They're going to be really important in this game.
Mate, very good point, because you look at how they both use the footy. Very rarely do you see those players, and Caleb Daniel is another. They just have the foot skills to hurt teams.
Yep.
And so, therefore, that'll be intriguing to see how that plays out. But, yeah, Sydney, yeah, probably, when you think of it, the most evenly matched semi-final of the two. And I think Brisbane, for me, at home, and I'm just going on the bounce-back factor from qualifying finals. Historically, teams that finish top four end up winning a final. Doesn't always happen, but I think they can do the job on Saturday night.
I'm going to tip Brisbane. I'm going to stay with Brisbane. I really liked what the Dogs did last weekend, because at halftime they were in danger of going out on the back of four successive losses at the end of the season after being a premiership fancy, a month out from the end of the home and away season. They had to dig in. They had to fight. They not only fought, they well and truly overcame Essendon. They had a really emphatic finish to the game, and they basically overpowered the Bombers. But I do think Brisbane in Brisbane is a big ask. I agree with everything you've said about the game. You guys, I think you've analysed it really well, pulled it apart really well. I'm going to Bontempelli if I'm Chris Fagan. And the reason I say that, you've got to be careful before you overlook what Alistair Clarkson does. Bontempelli was the bloke whose head Clarkson put a target on them, when Hawthorn beat him down in Launceston. To me, he's the guy I want. I want maximum heat on him and see if the others can beat you.
One last factor I'll mention. Do you see this as contributing, the Dogs flying from Tassie up to Brisbane? Night game, so they're stuck in their rooms all day. I think they got a training session tomorrow at the Gabba. I think initially they wanted a day game, but it's going to be pretty hot. The forecast is for to be pretty hot on Saturday. So ultimately I think a night game will suit them, but I'm not sure if they're that comfortable.
Well, the other thing is, Skeet, up there you have the dew, and the Dogs will handle the ball a lot. So they'll throw it around, it'll zigzag, there'll be a lot of quick handballs, that sort of thing. Those sort of things, that high possession, high skill level game is harder to pull off in the dewy conditions. So I think that plays into the hands of the local team, who will have devised a brand of footy that suits the conditions that they play in 11 times a year. So, yeah, I think that is a factor. And also the thing that it always amazes me, East Coast people continue to just dismiss this as a factor. Travel is a factor.
Yep.
Anything you have to do that the other mob doesn't have to do equals competitive disadvantage in a game. And sometimes it doesn't matter, and sometimes it isn't the decisive factor, but it is always a factor.
That's why I don't think the Dogs can win the flag. I mean, just what they've had to go through, and you have to go back to, I think, from a local point of view, the Eagles back in 1990, I think, and the trips across the Nullarbor, obviously more taxing, but they've gone Tassie, up to Brisbane, possibly Adelaide, then to Perth. No. I mean, they might win on Saturday night, but I just don't think, as you mentioned, the travel is a factor. They're just having too many hurdles, I think, against, say, a team like Port Adelaide or Melbourne, for instance, to go all the way. And Brisbane, to Adelaide and back, home deck, even at night, I think they'll be able to produce a victory against the Dogs.
All right, so we're two on Brisbane, one on the Dogs. It's not a bad tip, Quarters.
I'd call it courageous.
Yeah, well, we'll go with courageous.
Go back to your cab sav, mate.
Go with courageous for now, with the option of reviewing that on Tuesday.
Go back to your cab sav and your cheese board down there in Busso, mate.
Well, if you look at the form lines right up until 3 weeks before the end of the season, the Dogs are right in this, aren't they? So I don't have a problem with that tip. Guys, the source of the Ross Lyon story is Caroline Wilson. It's not a bad source.
Mm. Well, I'd say it's a very good source. Given she was sitting next to him.
She was co-panelist on the on Footy Classified, and obviously Caroline, one of the great newsbreakers of her time in the AFL. So
stuff. So just quickly, can I ask the question? So you're saying that Ross Lyon has pulled out of the race to become the coach of Carlton. So he's been told, I'm assuming that, I can't work out, given his rhetoric over the past week, where this has gone the 180 degrees.
This decision has been made overnight or this morning, given last night he was right in it.
Caro's saying that he contacted Luke Sayers early this morning to say he would not be a candidate to officially withdraw. It's a pretty strong mail.
Well, that decision has been made sleeping on it because, or something has happened this morning because last night he was fully in the race last night.
Yeah, I agree. So that's interesting. It's
so who becomes the number one favourite now? You would have to say Brad Scott.
If he's keen.
Yeah, that's right.
But also I wonder whether, like, I love the Collingwood model and I love the Melbourne model. You know, Goodwin with Mark Williams and Alan Richardson around him and other highly credentialed assistant coaches.
So is Kingsley now perhaps a candidate?
Well, I think they should be looking in that direction.
Jamie Graham,
possibly. I think they should be looking in that direction. You know, highly experienced, highly credentialed assistant coaches around a young coach who has a lot of promise and a lot of hunger and a firm grasp on where they think the game is headed from now, not where it was 5, 10 years ago.
Just to throw, I wonder if you're on that Carlton board or even on that subcommittee and you're looking at the Collingwood conference yesterday and you're looking at Craig McRae, I just wonder whether it just tips you over the edge.
Can I just throw one more into the mix, boys? Just, and this is, we may as well do it because it's all a possibility. Does this, any chance this means that the Clarko suddenly is,
oh, yeah, is
at their fingertips again? Just throwing it out there.
Could be.
So this was the thing that we talked about the other day, wasn't it? That Carlton were going to have a massive crack at Brian Cook as the CEO and wondering whether if Brian Cook came as the CEO, whether Alistair Clarkson would come as the coach. So that, let's watch this space.
Absolutely.
A bit.
Yeah, could be.
All right, let's move on to the Biggie Juice, the Feral Biggie Juice, juicy topic of the week brought to you by Thirsty Camel Bottle Shops.
It's all good, baby. It was all a dream.
Juicy topic of the week.
All right, boys, we're a couple of weeks on from the exit of our two clubs. Let's just throw a few things around as to what has happened in the 2 weeks since their season's finished and what we think they need to either stay in the mix or get back into the mix next year. Now, the interesting thing that has surfaced in the last couple of days is Melbourne may be a bidder for Adam Chera, and it may not just be the Blues in the mix to get him across the line.
Oh, well, Luke Jackson. And their first pig.
Oh, there's a pig flying by the window. I tell you what, you'll be asking the question if you're Fremantle.
You have to.
If it's Melbourne.
You have to ask the question, don't you?
Yeah, and you'll get a no.
Realistically, how do they get the job done with Melbourne? They don't have draft selection-wise, they're up against the Demons. So if they're one of, say, two or three clubs knocking on the door, or certainly the Dockers, and this helps Fremantle, obviously, because they need more than one suitor.
Well, I interestingly hear that they're not interested in Petrovsky's seat. Is that right? Or
I don't know where they're not interested in him. I just think that, like, clubs would prescribe a certain value to a certain player, and the value that Carlton would put on him as part of that trade and the value that Fremantle would put on him as part of that trade are two different values.
So I think two early picks is what they're after. So clearly they're chasing a key forward.
I don't think they're going to get two. So if I'm Fremantle, I want pick six, which is going to become pick eight. And then it's a matter of what else I can squeeze. So it picks six, which becomes pick eight.
So you want Melbourne to do a deal with whoever. You want two picks inside the first.
Well, they have to try and find a way to climb up the ladder.
Yeah.
Or they have to throw in a player. What happens if it's their first rounder plus Angus Brayshaw? What happens if they say it's Angus Brayshaw for Adam Chera?
I'm going first rounder. I'd like Brayshaw thrown in with that. It's a good mix with his brother at the club. So, yeah, but it'll be fascinating to see what they do there.
What happens is, who's a better player, just straight up, Angus Brayshaw or Adam Chera, in 2 years' time, who's a better player?
I'm going Chera.
Oh, Chera.
Okay. So if it's Angus Brayshaw plus what?
their first round pick.
I don't think it's Angus Brayshaw plus the first round.
No, it's probably overs, but that's what you asked for.
Yeah.
So it possibly is you still want their first round. Do you want you want their first round pick and their next best pick?
Incidentally, to everyone out there listening, we're just throwing things around.
Yeah.
There's no suggestion that Angus Brayshaw is going to.
Don't light up the Freo switchboard. Yeah, that's right. Although there has been talk around Angus Brayshaw.
We're talking hypotheticals that may allow that to happen, aren't we?
We are.
And we're wondering why Melbourne is suddenly part of the mix. And now clearly Melbourne and Angus Brayshaw are going to be loath to talk about this until given where they are and what they're trying to do at the moment. But hypothetically speaking, what can make this happen?
That's a midfield that's become all of a sudden much, much deeper, or an already deep midfield, that Melbourne mix, isn't it?
Yeah, and we are presuming, and this is Docker supports. I put something on Twitter yesterday about the Jackson-Chera swap, which, as you said, I've been told by many people that tell them they're dreaming, but we don't know that, you know, Luke Jackson may well be a 10, 15-year player at Melbourne. And for his sake, if he's enjoying his footy, may he flourish in that role. But if he is a bit like Chera and might be missing his family, I don't know he is, but if that is the case, then why not? If Fremantle's interested in, or sort of interested, why wouldn't they ask the question?
What about just Jackson and a couple of teeth?
Exactly. And an orthodontic bill.
Well, no, let's knock a bit off it. Jackson minus the teeth. Yeah. Jackson, and we'll do the dental work.
Yeah, mind you, we do have to do some dental work. Can you use that argument?
All right, now across town at West Coast, the talk is about, at the moment, it's about the coaching panel, isn't it? So Jamie Graham looks like won't be at West Coast next year.
Yep, gone.
Strong talk, getting stronger by the day, that Jared Schofield might be back at West Coast next year.
Well, refreshing, because there's been questions over their ball movement, and look at the job he's done with the power midfield. So I think that all instantly ticks the box. I would love that to happen.
Skeet, you've been a commentator at Waffle Games. You would have had a lot to do with Jared Schofield and seen a lot of him. Is he a senior coach in waiting?
Well, I think he would certainly be, whether it's in the next 3 to 5 years, I think you could certainly say he'd be able. We know what he did at Subiaco. He's formed an apprenticeship. For instance, you talk of Craig McRae, what he's done. Well, I think Jared Schofield, similarly, with Subiaco and Port Adelaide, the results since he's been there, I think, speak for themselves deep into the finals, that he absolutely would become a coach in waiting now, whether that is coming back to West Coast, being an assistant, and then maybe in 3 or 4 years, if Adam Simpson moves on for whatever reason, then absolutely he's a coach in waiting. And he's one of those guys that he can get the best out. And the midfield job he's done at Port Adelaide's been terrific. So all of that being said, boys, I assume it's because they've been in quarantine and that the Waffle side is still got a match, I think, to play out. West Coast haven't pulled the trigger with any list changes as such that I'm aware of significantly. So, that to me is going to be really interesting to see where they had head with Hutchings and Vardy and Brander hasn't been re-signed. So there's a bit to play out at West Coast, and I'm going to be interested over the next 2 or 3 weeks to see exactly which way they head.
For mine, Vardy has to survive, doesn't he? Like, you just need that ruckman on the list that you're familiar with, who's familiar with you, who can step into the void if the senior ruckman goes down.
Do they need to target a ruckman in the draft?
Well, Nathan Vardy's not going to cost him much.
No, but what I'm saying is, do they need to target another young ruckman?
They've got Callum Jamison waiting in the wings.
I understand that, but, and they've got Bailey Williams.
Yep.
But do they need another one? There are no guarantees that those two are going to be the players they want them to be.
Ruckman, Skeet, this is an interesting development, I reckon, over the last couple of years. Clubs have been going one ruckman shy rather than loading up on ruckman and just having them rotting in the lower grades.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking out loud with regards to Nick Natanui and what his career looks like in 2 years from now. I mean, he's 31, I'm thinking. I'm guessing, and I sold him short there, but he's certainly 30 or thereabouts. His body has had 2 recos on his knee. So, Laquarta's suggestion, and Callum Jamison is in the mix, obviously, coming through at West Coast. They've got to have to look at the next option, a succession plan, dare I say it, for Nick Nat in the next year or so, and whether that means getting a ruckman in now. Because you're right, you are right at the moment. Vardy serves a purpose.
I wouldn't have Vardy playing very often. But my criteria for Nathan Vardy, if he's at the club next year, would be in case of emergency, break glass, Nathan Vardy comes in. Emergency is Nick Natanui suffering an injury that takes him out of the senior team for anywhere from 4 weeks to the season. Mark Hutchings, you would think, probably great servant, but probably time at the club up?
Yeah, I think so. And I think they need to, again, if you're looking at a ruckman in the draft, it wouldn't hurt them to go midfield in the draft as well.
Braden Ainsworth?
Trouble.
Line ball, yeah, probably erring on, leaning onto the side of in trouble.
Jared Cameron?
I haven't seen enough. No, I'd keep him. I think, you know, small forward, whippy, no, I'd keep him.
I think Cameron might be in trouble.
Okay.
And the other one that's intriguing is the no contract offer yet for Jared Brander. That's, so what's their thinking there?
We don't know. Do we? We don't know what he's capable of. So
yeah, it's quite it's telling though, Quarters, isn't it?
Yeah, it
no
is
contract.
Telling. Yeah, yeah, I think he'd be.
They know more than us. And the fact that he doesn't have a contract offer before him, they don't make a lot of great list management errors, West Coast.
Yeah.
So I think that's a fairly telling factor in all of this. So you would think he's probably, well, at best he's 50-50 to be there, isn't he? If he doesn't have a contract offer before him by now, you'd think he's 50-50 at best.
Yep.
And
yep, and the Jordan Clark scenario, Geelong, Brander perhaps over that way. But all those talks will be had out aloud by people like us. Whether they're happening between West Coast officials or not remains to be seen. But I'd certainly think that a Clark or a Narkel back to WA and maybe Brander going
Clark
elsewhere
wouldn't hurt
is,
him.
Is
bit of speed off half back, possibly through the mid. I think he'd be good for their list.
Yeah, Clark v. Brad, that's an interesting one. That's probably a good trade for West Coast. They need some speed, don't they? Brander, whether the Cats are going to be interested in Brander would be the...
You know what, I'm really interested to see how he goes. When he's moved, and I think he probably is moved, when he is, how he goes. Because we don't know, do we? As you say, West Coast know more than we do, but in a different environment, in a different list, let's see what he's capable of.
All right, let's move on to everybody's favourite segment.
Hello,
Newman. You control information.
Josh's mailbag.
Hello, guys. Lots of mail in the interim between Tuesday and some carryover from last week. Let's hit straight into it. Chris emailing it. Hello, gang. I have two questions. Would you rather take two of the three in who would you rather take out of the two of these three? Van Ruin, Amos, or Williams in the draft, or a package, a couple of picks, e.g. pick 8 and a future second for Logan McDonald, and use pick 6 from the draft to take one of the talls or a mid? I'm guessing for Freo.
I don't know if Sydney are releasing Logan McDonald. I know he hasn't played a lot of footy here this year, but he's very highly rated.
3 goals on debut.
Buddy won't, Buddy won't be around forever. He's a rare talent. I don't think he'll be released. But of the Waffle players, I haven't really seen enough of them, to be totally honest, but I know Skeeter has seen quite a bit of them.
Amos seems to be the one, doesn't he, Skeet?
Yep. Yeah, that's the one I was about to say. Jai Amos, I've seen enough of him at Colts representative level to think he could become that forward that if I was Freo, I'd be really trying to zone in on him and see if you could somehow snare him in the off-season. Van Ruin's been used, by the way, in defence and attack in more recent times in these state representative games. So he's an interesting player, and he'll definitely go. It's just a question of what he is at this stage. So, and the third player you mentioned there was?
Jack Williams.
Jack Williams, yeah. Yeah, he's got under the radar a little bit. He's from Fremantle kid who's been really good at times. Probably doesn't have the same profile as an Amos and a Van Ruin, but I think he could certainly be. I put him just behind those other two at the moment, but he played really well against South Australia, I'm told, last Saturday. So there's a case to be made, certainly. For I think Amos, if you're going to separate one from the rest, he's the one that I think will go highest in the draft.
The Busselton boy came out. He wasn't really watched much at the start of the season. He's really played himself into a potentially first rounder.
So this is the other thing about Amos, which I reckon clubs will look at it and they'll go, wow, the upside. This guy's been driving up from Busselton to play for him. To have the season that he's had while...
he's not training with him.
While basically commuting. Yeah, but he's not training with the club. He's not doing the full program. He's having to do all that by himself. All that speaks volumes for a kid's ability to be self-sustaining, self-starting, all those things that take you higher as you get into an elite program. I'd be very excited about Jai Amos. Just throw one at you guys quickly before we move on to the next mailbag. If you were Fremantle and you only had one top 10 pick and it was either a tall like Amis or a big mid like a Matty Johnson.
I'm going a tall.
Or a Neil Erasmus. What do you think?
Tall.
Yeah.
They need a tall forward.
They need a tall. Exactly. I think they need that tall forward. They're crying out for it. I'm not saying mids are a dime a dozen. That's too harsh. But I think to try and find that nugget, that, you know, the Logan McDonald type moving forward, I think Amos can certainly be that type of player in the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, no argument here.
Moving on, Chris had another one just quickly. Would Jack Carroll be in the mix as part of the Chera deal? Haven't heard that Freo were interested in SPS and Carlton. Wouldn't be keen of letting go of Fisher. Thoughts?
I think the fact that Jack Carroll's barely seen the light of day at Carlton tells you that Adam Chera played 76 of a possible 85 games, I think. Jack Carroll, he's been there for a year or two now and hasn't really played much. So I'm not saying he can't play. I'm not saying he won't emerge as a player. But when you're doing the comparison, Jack Carroll can't be any more than a set of steak knives on the end of the deal.
Matt from go on, mate.
I'm just going to say very quickly, one thing that WA, in terms of the draft, our young players have been able to get out there and play footy, and Victorians, you know, that's a sad state of affairs with them for a couple of seasons now, but very tough to judge some of the players given their lack of footy over the past 18 months.
Damien just wanted to clarify something from Tuesday. We had Andrew Vitalins emailing in asking about why Tasmania wasn't given the deal. He heard from AFL Daily that it was a broadcasting decision. It wasn't logistically feasible to move the OB van and everything that goes with it, the cameras and everything, to a new location overnight. Don't know if it's true or not, but it kind of makes sense.
What? This is for one game?
Or between games, if they were at different venues, Launceston versus Hobart,
But they don't have OB vans in Tasmania.
No, they do, but transferring the entire thing overnight from Hobart to Launceston.
Josh, I think you're right. I think that was the reason, Lonnie to Hobart, I think it was logistically too difficult. So
Lonnie to Hobart?
200K.
Saying, 2 hours drive.
Just set them up separately, though.
That's the reason, Quarters. Now, just, you know, stick to your lane.
Stay in your lane, Quarters.
Have you done the drive from Launceston to Hobart?
Have you done it, Quarters? Because you told us 13,000
times. Plenty of time.
While dreaming of Michael Tuck in a sleeveless jumper.
Mate, they could stop at Cradle Mountain, climb the mountain, and still get there in 3.5 hours.
Matt from Melville is a very, optimistic Freo fan. He says, what would it take for Freo to pry Jackson out of Melbourne? I'd say pretty much nothing, but he's offered maybe Chera, Lobb, and the top 10 pick to Carlton. But you'd think after winning it all with the Rising Star, Jackson or near impossible.
So you're saying you get Luke Jackson and you give up Chera, top 10 pick, and Lobb?
Yeah.
I'm taking it.
No.
If you're Carlton or you're
Freo? Look.
Luke Jackson.
In your eagerness to not be bent over, don't bend over voluntarily.
But if that's the last option, I'm taking it.
Skeet?
Well, you and I have had this discussion, Duff, about what it would take to get Luke Jackson here. We mentioned Chera, Lobb, as two parts of the equation. Quarters just wants...
Not the top 10 draft pick. Maybe the second rounder.
Didn't Paul Hazelby say he'd give all their draft picks just for Luke Jackson?
Well, Paul Hazelby's not the list manager at Fremantle, and thank goodness for that.
Well, I know.
Has a lot, very bright football person, Hayes, and has a lot of great ideas. But when you are the bloke who has to sign off on this stuff and decide whether your list is stronger or weaker as a result of the trade, Adam Chera and Rory Lobb and maybe a lower-end draft pick. The top 10 draft pick, boys, is where your next Adam Chera, your next Matthew Pavlich, your next Luke McFarlane, your next Aaron Sandilands, your next David Mundy comes from. Do not trade them.
Agree.
No.
Is Luke Jackson an absolute generational player, though?
Yeah, he is.
Mm.
But don't forget, you're losing an A-grade mid.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, you could replace him with a Hayden Young, perhaps. I'm just saying.
The whole idea of losing a gun like Chera is make them pay overs to get him because they want him in the door.
Go Ambit, absolutely.
Like West Coast won on the Chris Judd trade, and they would have won bigger, except Tony Knott, who proved to be a very good waffle player, didn't prove to be an AFL player. But you got to make sure you win. When you lose a gun like Chera, you got to make sure you win on the trade. You do not lose by getting desperate about what you get back in. And Luke Jackson is everything you said he was, but you are losing a gun mid.
I think the example for Freo, and it's probably the best example in more recent times, is the Lachie Weller move to the Gold Coast. And that is a win that has, although Chera's gone, that was the type of result that Fremantle fans. Everyone you spoke to thought, yep, we're in front on that one, and hopefully that'll be the case this time again.
Now moving to from another potentially generational big to another in Tim English. This is from Roy from Parkwood. What is the contract status in Tim English, and would it be would he be someone the Dockers would want to pursue? He seems like another version of Rory Lobb, tall forward who doesn't like rucking, but would be perfect to complement Sean Darcy in the ruck. And then he also asked about Luke Jackson, but we'll stay with this one for a sec, just Tim English quickly.
So it's not that Tim English is a reluctant ruckman. I think they just view him as having better value as a forward at the moment. And one of the great challenges for Luke Beveridge in the back half of this year with Steph Martin going down injured is where to put Tim English. And that was the great thing about Josh Shackey on the weekend, bobbing up and kicking two. They were able to release English into the ruck more often. English still plucked a couple and had a couple of shots at goal. Shackey bobbed up and kicked two. So he would be a great get for either WA team. And that would be the problem for Fremantle trying to finagle a trade, is that you'd have West Coast in there as well, upping the bidding. So, you know, that forward ruck at West Coast, West Coast would argue, okay, 2 years of forward ruck to Nick Nat and then ruck. And Fremantle would be going forward ruck to Sean Darcy for the next 10 years. You beauty, that's our ruck stock's taken care of. So very good player, but would be in very high demand.
Yeah, and the other non-significant or significant point with that is Tim English, I think, really enjoys Melbourne. And look, as great as it is to get a West Australian back, some of these young guys, let's be honest, they go across, play footy in Victoria. There's 10 clubs there. They love it. They love being, and once they're settled, it's you know, you have to make sure that he wants to return home. Not all players want to come back to Perth.
Yeah, but we've got the grand final.
We do have the grand final.
Well, hopefully Tim English does get to enjoy Melbourne, because he wouldn't be enjoying it too much at the moment, but let's hope that that clears very, very, very soon.
I had another quick one, Roy, saying now that Luke Jackson has no front teeth, that means he's an automatic chance to join Collingwood. So that's a bit of a nice little whack there from Roy.
Well, you know, it was a Collingwood supporter who invented the toothbrush. Otherwise, it would be called a teeth brush. Boom, boom.
Happy Father's Day. Quarters, that is your Happy Father's Day.
Let's move to one more. Sorry, guys, we're just running out of time. The boys been in for over an hour. Let's go to, okay, quick two-parter here. I know that you're probably sick of it, or green suspension, probably get rid of that one. Do you guys think it is fair that for a South Australian non-Vic fan like myself to feel very disenfranchised by the AFL's extension of the MCG grand final contract? If so, how can fans and clubs rectify this? This is Ernest Hugenbosen from Alding Beach, South Australia.
Would that be a German name?
Yes. Very German place, South Australia.
Very German place. Even the Adelaide Crows jumpers are very German.
Aldinga Beach.
Well, it's partly founded by Germans because of the undulating hills and the wineries there.
And Lutherans, wasn't it?
Yes.
There's a strong Lutheran contingent in South Australia. The other thing that South Australians are very proud of, it was a free state. They didn't have convicts.
Well, they're big, is that
on
a good that thing?
They are big on that.
Is that a good thing?
I've heard multiple people say that from South Australia.
I'd suggest it's a good thing.
Oh, well.
Helps forge a bit of character.
What, having convicts?
Well, built the Great Ocean Road in Victoria.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm all for a few from the wrong side of the tracks, but apparently the South Australians are very proud of.
Well, of course they are.
But of
good
course,
luck to them.
Yeah, they've had a few interesting crimes over there, so it hasn't saved them from from that side of society. All right. What was the question again?
Yeah, sorry.
The extension of the grand final in
is
Melbourne.
That a slap in the face? How do you rectify that as a fan and for the clubs over here with the extension of the MCG grand final contract and the fact it's moved to Perth this year?
The back end of that question is, how do we rectify this? Interesting comments by Damien Barrett, who's a senior person on afl.com.au. He suggested that once every 5 years, that the AFL should be moving to do this, once every 5 years, the grand final should be played somewhere other than the MCG.
And rotate it.
Rotate it. So we're having one in Perth. There's been one at the Gabba. Have the next one in 5 years' time in Adelaide. Yep. Then back to the Gabba before the Olympics. They can trial the stadium that will be built for the Olympics in 2032. Then on to maybe give Sydney some incentive to build an AFL-ready stadium that might hold 60,000 people. And then obviously back to Perth after
and then
that.
Tasmania, Christmas Island, Norfolk Island.
What do you think?
Look, I think I suggested this a week or two ago when it came to light that, you know, WA was going to host the grand final. We all acknowledge that the MCG deserves to host most, if not all, grand finals moving forward. I do think there should be a window, this contract going past 2050. There should be a window, as Damien suggested, and a few of us believe it irregularly, that we should be able to have that chance to bid or certainly put a case forward for it, whether it's in WA and with the stadium we have, if the Gabba becomes a better stadium in Sydney as well. I think it's a really good idea, whether blokes like Quarters who are Victorian and think that it should stay in Victoria, full stop, for the rest of our lives, and that's understandable. That's what they've grown up with. But I think in the national competition, it is at least worthy of a discussion.
I like the five. I do like the five-year rotation. I like that as an idea.
What is the minimum requirement for a stadium to host an AFL grand final? Clearly, you can't have a grand final at Metricon Stadium. No. You can't have a grand final at Giants Stadium. You can't have a grand final at UTAS or Blundstone. So what is the minimum requirement for an AFL grand final?
I would say 50, 55, which would mean, what's Sydney's capacity? Well, you've got the Olympic Stadium there, haven't you?
Well, for now.
Yeah, well, they're rebuilding it.
But that's coming down.
No, but they're rebuilding it.
So, boys, would you put Adelaide Oval in where it could host it at the moment?
See, I would, because I think you've got that end, the open end at Adelaide, where you could do something with temporary seating to get it to 60,000. So I wouldn't have any problem with that. I wonder whether it has to be 55,000 plus to be of the capacity that would warrant it hosting an AFL grand final.
Would do it justice, I think, if it was that number.
And by the way, it's not going to happen. No. if you're capable of signing a contract for 30 years.
And tacking on a year of, each year of COVID.
You're not going to be giving up one every 5 years. That's my tip on this. That became clear when they did this for no good reason a couple of years back. Thanks for joining us today. We've been brought to you by Tab Touch. You can get closer to the AFL action with Tab Touch. Please gamble responsibly. Please call Gamblers Help on 1800 858 858 if you run into problems.
If you're a fan of the podcast, why don't you send a message to Josh's mailbag? Have you figured out how to fix footy? Are you trying to settle a debate with a mate? Or maybe you just want two of Australia's most experienced footy journalists to turn their attention to an AFL issue of the week. Send to the mailbag at josh.garlep, that's G-A-R-L-E-P-P, at wanews.com.au. And also remember to like, subscribe, and of course, tell your mates so we can make this as big and as good as possible. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast on the game.
You know who? It's unbelievable.